life is like a whole game. When you get to a level and you're about to go to the next level, you're hit with a monster or you're hit with some sort of adversity. That adversity is your thoughts. All those issues that you've had when you were a kid coming back to tell you that you can't fucking do this. Do you truly want to become the person who you want to be? Or do you want to just go back to that old life?
Christopher Connolly, runner, speaker and storyteller, best known as Get Better with Chris. Once consumed by addiction and close to losing everything, he rebuilt his life 1 kilometer at a time. His story of survival, discipline, and daily movement has inspired thousands to fight for better.
I love to run, I love to struggle, and I love to fuck things up every now and then. I went from ecstasy to cocaine, cocaine to weed. I was always trying to look for that next high. And when I started to smoke crack, my mind just broke. FEAR is an acronym for false evidence appearing real. I'm an addict. I loved taking drugs. Nobody gave out to me back then. But then you go start running every day and people say, hold on for a second. You're swapping one addiction with another.
Like, hilarious.
It's a privilege to struggle. It's a privilege to feel. And it's a privilege to fuck your whole life up. Because the only way is up.
Find your edge. Christopher Connolly, welcome.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Look at you. I can't believe I've got you in already. This man is just after running, how many kilometres up and down Ireland? 600?
It's 680, I think.
80, was it?
I think so. Oh, wait, no, 580. Well, just on that.
Okay, yeah. That's where this conversation is going to go to the hay.
Yeah.
But who, give or take by 100 kilometres, who's
there?
How would you describe yourself? Because it's hard for me to describe you, if I'm being honest.
I actually don't know, to be honest, but I just love to live life. I love to run, I love to struggle, and I love to fuck things up every now and then.
Right, okay, go against the grain. You love to struggle. That is an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
You've definitely had your fair share of struggles. Tell me about how you grew up, where you grew up, and what your childhood was like.
So I grew up in Fatima Mansions, which is basically Dublin E, inner city Dublin, you might say. And when I grew up in a place that was like overrun with drugs and crime and criminality and a lot of people getting up to no good. We used to live in a block of flats, and growing up in the block of flats, you'd often see people selling drugs on the stairs, or taking drugs on the stairs, or just passed out on the stairs. And when I was growing up, I couldn't really correlate or understand what was going on. Like, I couldn't make sense of it. And whenever I asked my mother and father the question, they would always try to keep me safe, you know, and they'd almost steer me towards a lie. But when I was growing up, I couldn't comprehend, like, are they telling me the truth? Are these people on the stairs really on drugs? And I just didn't know my surroundings. And as I started to grow up, I just started to become a product of my environment, and I just started to act the way the other people would act, so I could fit in with the other people that I wanted to fit in with. And rather than actually expressing my true authentic self, I just wanted to be safe around the others.
Did you realise there was a world outside of that, or was that all you knew then, was drugs and criminality and everything else like that?
No, I honestly didn't. I didn't. So, like, the crazy thing was that when I was growing up, I didn't actually understand that I was alive as well, if that makes sense. I just thought that I was living. Because when you're growing up in that environment, you can very easily become overrun with everything else that they're all doing, you know. And all I wanted to do was just sell drugs, take drugs, you know, be involved around all that. And then I started to ask myself, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? And the reason was because I wanted to fit in, and I wanted to be safe, and I didn't want anybody to bully me, and I didn't want anybody to give me a hard time. So I just kept doing the things that other people were doing in order to fit in with those people.
What age were you when this kind of started to spiral and kick off for you?
When I start getting into drugs, I suppose when I start... So I suffered a lot with me acne, basically. And for a long time when I was in school, a lot of people gave me a hard time. And the only way I found out to actually not get a hard time was hanging around with people who were up to no good selling drugs. And when I started to hang around with those people who were selling drugs, then I started to... I feel a false sense of protection by them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a sense of I'm actually going to be all right. And when I had got into the whole world, then I was introduced to the gym. And when I went into the gym, I started trying to build muscle. And I can remember the first drug that I was ever properly introduced to was steroids, testosterone. when I went into the gym, I wasn't just relying on all these people to keep me safe. I started wanting to keep myself safe. You know, I want to be perceived as somebody who nobody would have messed with. So I started taking testosterone. I started taking more steroids and I started putting on muscle mass. And before I knew it, overnight, I was just a different person. And people addressed me different. People spoke to me different. And I actually started to feel different within myself. And I couldn't understand why, but I knew that whatever I was doing was actually working. But ultimately, at that very moment, I was only trying to be perceived as somebody who I wasn't. So I wouldn't have to actually show the world who I truly was. And who I truly was at that time was somebody who was very insecure, somebody who was very afraid, and somebody who didn't know what the fuck they were doing in life.
This episode of Find Your Edge is brought to you by Hedgehogs vs. Foxes, a video production studio crafting bold, cinematic content for brands in lifestyle, corporate, events, and more. Visit us at hvf.ie to learn more.
Aside from the steroids, obviously getting into the gym, getting training, you were looking for an outlet, but you got trapped there as well. So, you know, the experience with anyone who deals with addiction is a feeling of feeling trapped. And other things, I know anyone I've spoke to said that. So there was no way out. And aside from the steroids, what other substances did you get hooked on?
So I always describe this as a perfect storm, you know. And everything sort of seems brilliant at the start, you know. But you're just spiraling into progressive bad behaviours. When I went to the gym and I started to get noticed by people externally, I started to notice that women also noticed me as well. So I was like, happy fucking days. I never got any noticeable, women never really gave me the time of day. And I just wanted to keep getting the time of day at women. Mm-hmm. So I started going to any place where women were, which is mostly nightclubs, bars, and anywhere where there's alcohol. So I started drinking. And then before I knew it, then I went over to Ibiza and I took ecstasy. When I took ecstasy for the very first time in my life, I felt like that was it. That was the one thing that I always craved. Because it wasn't what it gave me, it was what it took away from me. And it took away my anxiety. It took away my self-confidence that I always felt like I wasn't enough. And when I had that first experience with ecstasy, it helped me to feel like I actually was enough. Helped me to feel like I didn't have to worry about being bullied or being somebody who I wasn't. I actually felt like I could be myself. And I was actually very naive to believe that when I took that ecstasy, it was going to be like that for the rest of my life. And then some fella in a nightclub said to me, oh no, this comes down, you have to take another one. I was only a young fella. Like, I was like, what do you mean you have to take another one?
What age were you then?
I think I was around 17, 18. 18, yeah.
And would you say things started to spiral from there?
Yeah, so like my drug use started off pretty late, like in regards to everybody else, you know. A lot of people start to get into that stuff from an early age. But when I got into it, I really got into it, you know. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I just loved drugs. I loved what they done for me. And I loved what they took away from me. And it always helped me to feel like everything was going to be okay. Until I felt like it wasn't. And then I had to use more and more and more. And then I started to get very inquisitive. I went from using ecstasy to using cocaine. And when I found cocaine, I was like, oh my God, there's another realm to this whole life. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that I was just falling more into addiction. Mm-hmm. And when I got into using cocaine, it was a different experience towards using ecstasy. And I'm not trying to glorify this, I'm just giving my own representation of what it done to me. And when I started to use cocaine, I was just like, hold on a second, I can use this in a nightclub, I can use it in a pub, I can use it back home, I can use it anywhere. And it really instilled something inside me that I was just lacking for so long. And it was a false sense of self.
At what stage did you realize that one of your underlying issues was this anxiety that you've mentioned, that the ecstasy took away and the cocaine took away and the steroids took away? When did you realize what anxiety was?
That's actually a good question, John. Yeah. I probably still don't know fully what anxiety is, if I'm honest with you. You know, but I could always correlate that there was a knot in my stomach. or I felt a little bit weird. That would be the best way to explain it, you know. A lot of people explain anxiety in a lot of different ways, but for me, I just felt very overwhelmed. I felt very off, and I knew that I needed something to take that away, but I didn't know that I needed to do something. I was so quick to look at the external way of releasing anxiety or releasing that feeling of dis-ease from me, rather than actually getting into exercise and fitness, which ultimately had helped to change my life.
So we've spoken a bit about your environment and where you grew up and the people around you. Do you think that there's a systemic level of anxiety that's just felt there, that when you're, you know, you don't see any other way out? Is a lot of that coming from anxiety? Is it coming from habit, that, you know, or not knowing anything else?
I actually don't know. That's the honest answer. I don't know, but I do know that it's there. And when it's there, it can just feel like it's going to be a life forever. And I think that's what really concerned me, you know. I just didn't want to be like that. And that can trigger a lot of thoughts, you know. I was always wondering, like, whether I should be on this earth or not, or should it ever take me life. I used to always comprehend that, you know. And still to this day, I always still have that back and forth, you know what I mean? It's just in me, and it's also in some other people as well. I don't think there's a specific way. Everything has labels these days. Everybody can always explain things specifically down to the T, but I just don't believe everything can be explained. I think that some things are just felt, and people feel the way they feel, and they can't understand it, they can't correlate it, they can't comprehend it, but it just is the way it is. And people don't always need to be able to explain it. You just need somebody to be there to listen to them.
What was it turning point for you where you did find someone to listen to or ask for help?
So I got the opportunity to help a lot of times, you know. But I can remember a friend of mine told me that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I was just never ready to get help. I was offered treatment a lot of times. And with addiction is progressive. And what happened with me was I went from ecstasy to cocaine. I went from cocaine to weed. I went from weed to tablets. And I was always trying to look for that next high. And ultimately, it led me to smoking crack cocaine. And when I started to smoke crack, my mind just broke in an instant. And I lost my mind. And I was entered into a state of psychosis. And when I was in the state of psychosis, I couldn't correlate what was real and what was fake. And I was just in this battle with my own mind. And I ended up fleeing the country. Now I tell the story time and time again. Sometimes I've got to pay me bollocks telling the story. But the reality of it is my story. And it's the truth as well. When I fled the country, I went over to England and I was sleeping in bushes because I couldn't stay in hotels, because in my mind was a hitman coming to shoot me. And my family were in on this master plan with this hitman coming to shoot me. And they were trying to get me a hotel. I was like, these cunts are trying to set me up. I'm sleeping in a bush. Fuck this. Nobody's going to know where I am. And it was just probably the worst time in my life. But for me, it just felt normal, you know, because that's how I grew up.
Was that your turning point?
When
did you turn? You know, was there a low point, or was there a moment where you went, you know, there's a window here and I need to take action? Or was there a window where you were forced to take action?
So during that moment in psychosis, you're in it, immersed in it, terror, pain, all those negative emotions. And then for a little while, you're over. And then you're like, hold on for a second. Am I actually mentally ill here? Well, all those things that I was thinking, seeing, feeling, actually something that was just by happenstance. And I started to fight with the two. And then I started to speak to my family. And they all started saying to me, look, we promise you, you're mentally ill here. Like, your mind is gone. You're in psychosis. And I didn't. It was my first time also hearing about psychosis. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't understand what was going on. But I knew I needed help. And at the right time, a friend of mine had rang me and said, have you ever went to treatment? And I said, no. And he said, well, I've went to Ashree and it helped to save my life, so I could probably do the same to you. And as soon as I got home, I just rang them and I told them that I need help and I need it as soon as possible.
What was treatment like?
It was the worst experience of my life at the start, and then it was the best thing that I've ever discovered, Because as soon as I went in, there was nobody giving me the time of day that everybody else would. Because people used to always entertain me because they didn't want to be confrontational with me. If you try to speak with an addict and an addict is trying to tell you their way and you're trying to tell them the actual way it is, they'll just fight you tooth and nail on it. Nobody wanted to ever fight with me because obviously I was a fucking nuisance, you know what I mean? But in treatment, they tell you, like, you're speaking like this, and you're acting like this, and it has fucking consequences. And nobody ever spoke to me like that before. First of all, I was terrified. I was like, what the fuck? Like, first of all, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? And second of all, I was wrong. And I realised I was wrong. And then from realising I was wrong, I just understood that, hold on for a second, if I was the one who fucked my whole life up, I'm the one who can rectify it. And from that very day, I made sure that I rectified it. Because I was always trying to manipulate and control each and every single person around me. When in reality, I was just destroying everything. I lost my daughter. I lost my girlfriend. I lost my family. I lost my mental health. And I just lost my whole mind, you know. And from being in treatment, actually experiencing what it's like to hear all the destruction that you've caused, just helped me to grow.
How long were you in treatment for?
So I went to primary treatment and I went to secondary treatment. And primary treatment is 28 days where basically you're taught the parameters of how to act, how to behave, and how your addiction works. Everything to do with psychology, and that really helped me. And at the end of the 28 days, you get the option then to go to secondary treatment, and they had offered me to go to secondary treatment, and at the time I was very upset, and I was very, very lost, because I just wanted to go home and be the dad to my daughter, who I hadn't been. And I made the decision to go to secondary treatment. That was probably the best decision, once again, that I made. And that's one thing that helped me to realise, that you don't need to have it all figured out straight away. You just need to keep doing the next best thing. And before you know it, it'll all work out.
Is there anyone in particular that's been a big influence on you, or that was there to support you on that journey? Or do you feel like you were isolated and on your own, and had to be isolated or on your own to do that?
There's loads of people who will help you. There's loads of people who will guide you. There's loads of people who will be there to give you a helping hand. But ultimately, like it or not, you have to do it on your own. It has to be you. And that's one thing that I realised. Like, it has to be me. Like, when I'm going to sleep at night, it's just me, my own thoughts, with my own mind. When I wake up in the morning, once again, it's just me, you know. People will always be there to help you. And I'm very grateful for all those people that were there to help me. But it was me who needed to change my mind, me who needed to change my behaviour, and me who needed to change the fucking sob story that I kept telling myself time in and time out, that kept leading me to relapse.
Yeah. What was the biggest tool that you think you used, the sort of tools that you used that helped you, you know, get your mindset right, stay focused and stay on track?
First of all, the biggest thing was taking accountability for everything, you know, even if it wasn't my fault. You know, I used to always blame everybody on everything else. And I'd say, oh, but my life is fucked up because of him, a whore. And I started saying, hold on a second, maybe it's me. Even if it wasn't me, just still take the blame. Still take the accountability. Because then, like, it's on you to change whatever it is that needs to be changed. And that's one of the best things that I ever done. And also awareness. Having awareness for where I am, who I am, the thoughts that I'm thinking, the behaviours that I'm starting to carry out. I question everything. And even in my addiction, I still questioned everything, but that was because I was paranoid. But when I'm sober, I'm probably still a little bit paranoid, but I call it awareness, you know. I ask myself certain questions throughout the day, like, was the way I spoke to John Belton a couple of minutes ago the right way to speak to him? Do I owe him an apology? Can I rectify that? And then I'll just try to do the best thing that I possibly can in order to make sure that the trajectory that I'm moving forward on is a trajectory that I want to be on. It's closer to my purpose, it's closer to my goals, and it's closer to creating a better version of me.
And at what stage on your journey did you find running?
So when I was in secondary treatment, So basically, secondary treatment is an extensive stay inside a big, huge house, let's say, and you're there with 9 other lads and you're learning how to reintegrate into society, and they don't really let you out much unless you go to the gym or unless you want to run. So you can only go to the gym for so long. And when I heard that they let you out to run, I was like, fucking brilliant. I'm just going to go outside and start running. And I told all the lads I was going to run a half marathon and went outside and was going to fucking completely and utterly just lie to everybody that I'd done a half marathon. And then I started running and I said to myself, all I ever do is lie, you know. It's all I ever done for my whole life. Fucking said I was going to do something, lied about it, pretend I'd done it, and then go back and just carry on about my day. And that very day, I done the half marathon. I went back and I told the lads, to be quite honest with you, nobody gave a bollocks that I'd done a half marathon. But I gave a bollocks, because the first time I said I was going to do something, and I'd done it. And like, when I grew up, I'd always say I was going to do something, and I never done it. And even when I only ran the length of Ireland that time, that old version of me came back in, and I was like, just quit, just give up, or just fake an injury, you know. And I was like, no, because that's not who I am anymore.
Do you think a lot of people have that? Because I you know, I recognise those traits. And even a lot of, the scary thing for a lot of people, myself included, is I'm sure they're listening to this going, I've a little bit of that trait.
Yeah.
I recognise that trait in myself. Do you think that's something a lot of people possess?
Yeah, 100%. I think anybody who says they don't have is a liar, you know, in the nicest way possible. I think that when you get so close to becoming the person who you want to be, that's when the old sense of self starts to come back. I always think of this like a game. Life is like a whole game. When you're playing a video game, when you get to a level and you're about to go to the next level, you're hit with a baddie, or you're hit with a monster, or you're hit with some sort of adversity. And it's on you to get through that adversity in order to get to the next level. That adversity is your thoughts. It's your old sense of self. It's your self-esteem. All those issues that you've had when you were a kid coming back to tell you that you can't fucking do this. And it depends on, do you truly want to become the person who you want to be enough to overcome all this shit? Or do you want to just go back to that old life? And that's what happens to most people. They say, oh, I just want to be safe. Oh, I just want to be comfortable. And you fall back into that old version of themselves. Whereas I just see it all as part of the game, or as part of my destiny, you know.
Is fear a big part of your life?
Yeah. Like I still get fearful, like, about a lot of things, you know. But I always remember that, first of all, in treatment, I was taught that fear is an acronym for false evidence appearing real, you know. And sometimes it's just something that we create in our minds. Because if I'm afraid of something, it could be something totally different to you. And you think, what is he afraid of that for? So therefore, it's only an illusion. It's only something that I am starting to build up in my mind. And I'll always ask myself, like, do I want to do something? And if I want to do something, I always find a way. I don't care if I'm afraid or not, you know. I don't care of any sort of repercussions it has. If I want to do something, and if I know that's going to benefit me, my family, or my daughter, I'll do it regardless of fear or regardless of any feelings that go with it.
And at what stage on your journey did you decide that you need to start sharing this on social media and, you know, runner Chris, 5K with Chris? How was that born? Where did that come from?
So when I was in treatment, I was very mentally ill. And I was in primary treatment at the time. I remember standing in the garden. And when I was standing in the garden, I was very upset. Because I asked my auntie, first of all, before I went to treatment, will these voices in my mind ever go away? She actually said to me, Chris, we actually don't know. And all I wanted for her was to say, yeah, they will. You're going to be normal. And you're going to live a great life, you know. But the honest answer was that she couldn't give me the truth. She did give me the truth. She didn't give me the truth that I wanted. And when I was in secondary treatment, I remember praying to God, and I got very honest and very upset. And I said, please, God, if you can take away these voices, if you can help me to live a normal life, and if you can just help all of this subside, I'll scream this from every corner of every piece of the planet to each and every single person who's going through it, to show them that there is a way, to show them that they're going to be all right, and to show them that there's another life out there past drink, drugs, alcohol and addiction. That's what you've done.
So you started sharing about it. How did that start out? What did that look like, your first 5K?
When I was in treatment, I always looked at YouTube videos. So I always looked at successful people, and I was fascinated with how people spoke, how they behaved, and how they were able to articulate their thoughts, feelings, emotions into words. And I used to always wonder, how did they do it? You know? And one thing I was fascinated was, like, if somebody was through a specific time in their life, and I was also through that time, well, I felt like if they could do it, well, then I could do it. So I wanted to know, like, what obstacles do people go through? And as soon as I started to get out of treatment, and as soon as I started to find running, that's when I started to say to myself, I actually need to ask people these questions. And I started off the 5K with Chris by asking successful people, how did you get to be where you are today? What obstacles did you overcome? And what's one piece of advice you'd like to give to a young person watching? Because when I was sick, and when I was struggling, and I was in the depths of it, these are people who I looked up to. Because in my mind, if I seen that John Belton had been through a breakup, or had acne on his face, or was in some sort of addiction at some stage of his life, if he could do it, well then I could do it. And I just knew that people needed to see the people who they look up to, you know. And it's not about celebrities, it's not about people in influence, it's people who have overcome adversity, obstacles, or being able to create a better life for themselves, mm-hmm. you know. So it's not about any of that fucking materialistic bullshit, it's about becoming a better version of yourself.
Success leaves a trail, so
yeah,
look at what someone else has done. And when did you realise that your content was motivating for other people? Now, I have to say, I've done a 5K with Chris, and the hardest part of doing a 5K with Chris is getting a window where there's not someone shouting at Chris as you're running through the Phoenix Park. Everyone's like, how are you, Chris? How are you, Chris? And he's like, I'll have to start again here. Well, at what stage did you go and, oh my God, someone's listening to this. This is having an impact. Can you remember a moment?
So the reason why I started to make the videos, first of all, because I wanted people to see that I was sober. But the way I was speaking and the honesty that I was speaking, people just connected with it, you know. Because I think people have a pain in their arse with people being perfect. Because not everybody's perfect, you know. And, like, I'm certainly not perfect, you know. But it just, I don't know, just people just identified with it. People just connected with it. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Because it helped me to feel like I wasn't alone. And I help them to feel like they weren't alone. And I'm no different than anybody else, you know. Like, and that's what I love. Like, yesterday I went, and probably shouldn't be saying this to you because I'm trying to, but you know. But I went and I got a curry. I left that out earlier.
You told me it was a McDonald's. I brought my face.
No, I got a curry down the next day as well.
Okay, right.
And as I was having my curry, a woman came up. She's like, can we get a picture? And I was like, yeah, of course. And jumped out and got a picture. And then somebody else was like, can I get a picture? And it had like a snowball effect. And a mate of mine says to me, like, do you never get a pain in your arse? I says, I'll never get a pain in my arse. Because there's a stage in my life where nobody wanted to know me. And now I feel like everybody wants to know me for the right reasons.
Yeah. I know. It is. It's very inspiring. And like, it's your story is amazing. But I think your authenticity is the biggest thing you have going for you. Where has this come from? Because your capacity to understand your own mind, your capacity to understand your own emotions, and your capacity to question your logic and your thinking. Is that just from treatment, or how have you built that? How have you created that within yourself?
Because I stopped listening to my mind and I started listening to my heart. And like, so that can sound like I'm trying to actually say something without actually holding accountability of it. But I swear to God, that's all I ever do. Whenever my mind gets too messed up or too overrun, I say, hold on for a second. Stop thinking and start feeling. And I listen to my heart and I ask myself, what's my intuition saying? You know, I always say that, like, prayer is when you're speaking to God, but intuition is when God is speaking to you. And whether you believe in it or not, like that, like, it doesn't really matter, because it matters to me and it's what's helped me. And I always just listen to how I'm feeling and I question everything. I question absolutely everything. And if something's not sitting right with me, if something's not feeling right with me, then I won't do it, or I won't be around people, or I won't carry out specific things.
You mentioned God, the Bible, and, you know, we've spoke about it before. At what stage in your treatment and in your journey did the Bible come in there? And, you know, what's your connection now with God? How do you feel that, and how much of a reliance and interaction do you have?
So I have a great relationship with God, and the reason why I have a great relationship with God is because when I was only a kid, my nanny used to bring me to church, And I could never understand why she kept bringing me to church. But I knew that she loved church. And I didn't love church. I actually just loved spending time with her. And it's bizarre because when she passed away and when she lost our battle with cancer, I felt like I'd been betrayed by God. And the irony of it was I carried that around me for so long. And I hated God and I didn't believe in God. And this woman who had always pushed me towards God had our life stolen by something that was outside of her control. And then when I got sick and then when I got ill, then I fell to my knees and I asked God for a little bit of help. And then I got the help. And I wouldn't have got the help unless she introduced me to God. And that's the crazy correlation that I have. And not everybody can understand that, but it's something that I understand. If my nanny never got sick, if she never lost her battle to cancer, if she was never able to introduce me to God, well, then I wouldn't be here today. You know, because that's what helped to save me. Because nobody could understand the thoughts that were going through my head. Nobody would actually give me the time of the day to actually, like, even entertain me. But God did. And I felt like I was heard. And every time I got down on my hands and knees and I spoke to God or the universe or an external force or whatever you want to call it, I was always heard, you know, and I never felt alone. And still to this day, that's something that helps me more than anything. I talk to my nanny and I talk to God. I talk to my granddad and I talk every day to them and it just helps me.
What other, aside from prayer and spirituality, what other daily routines do you have at the moment that you feel help keep you on track and keep you focused apart from exercise?
Just love, you know. I remember I was trying to learn about Nikola Tesla. I'm mad about energy, you know. And that's why I'm very fond of the likes of you and most people who I spend time with, because I don't care what anybody has. I really don't. I care about the energy, the interaction and how the individual is. And I can remember when I was learning about Nikola Tesla, one of the highest frequencies of vibration that we can affirm ourselves on is love. And when you are able to give love and when you're able to receive love, you're able to vibrate on a frequency of love. And every day that I wake up, I just ask myself, how am I, you know? Do I love myself? And if it's the case that I actually don't love myself on that day, which more often than not happens, I'll just try to love somebody else. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I'll just try to do something good for somebody else, even if I'm not feeling up to it. Sometimes I get penny bollocks doing good for other people because it gets thrown back in your face.
Yeah.
But I'll always try to do my best. And if I can't love somebody else, well, then that's when it comes back and trying to love myself. And if I can't love myself, then I'll love my daughter. You know, and I just try my best to navigate through love.
So let's go back to the Chris that was passing these lads and ladies and people on the stairwell who were selling drugs, on drugs, strung out, whatever else. You know, how would you chat to him now if you were back with him walking up the stairs as a younger kid seeing this? What would you say?
Everything is going to be all right. You know, when I was growing up, I just wanted somebody to tell me that everything was going to be all right. And I craved that for my whole life. I always wanted my ma to say it to me, wanted my dad to say it to me, wanted everybody to tell me that everything was going to be all right. But it wasn't going to be all right, you know? It was only going to be all right if I made it all right. And that's probably, like, I'd never change anything about me upbringing. I'd never change anything about it, you know? Even though it probably sounds messed up. I'm so grateful that it all happened to me. So grateful that my whole world fell apart. Because that's when I started to realise that I'm going to be all right. Once I make it all right, you know, it's probably one of the best things that I've ever learned.
Do you practice gratitude? I know that's a line that's thrown around in Instagram reels left, right and centre, but do you find yourself having to stop and practice gratitude, or you appear to have an amazing sense of gratitude towards what seems like mundane things to some people, like, isn't this amazing, isn't this great, are words that I hear you saying a lot. Is this something you've had to train yourself to do, or is that something that's innate or already in you?
I'm just thankful to be alive, and that's being totally honest with you. I'm so happy to be alive. I'm genuinely being honest here. I was on death's door, and if I didn't take my own life, the drugs are going to take me, and I still to this day, I don't understand how I'm here, but I'm just delighted that I'm here. I have a second chance at life, like, you know what I mean? My daughter has a dad in her life, and in the Bible it says, those who have more will be given, but the missing word from that is, those who have gratitude more will be given in life. And every time I mess up, every time I struggle, past couple of weeks I've been going through an extremely hard time. I'm going to be honest with you, I'm delighted because I know I'm at that level in my life where that's the obstacle, that's the adversity, and you're going to the next level. So be happy you're there because other people don't get that in their life. You know what I mean? It's a privilege to struggle. It's a privilege to fail, and it's a privilege to fuck your whole life up because the only way is up.
Is that for anyone listening, is that a bit of advice you would give about when adversity kicks in, that it's an opportunity for growth?
Yeah, 100%. Like I was always afraid of tough times, you know, and I always feared little things, you know, like, I don't know, like people passing away, you know, or losing everything that I lost. I was just afraid of that, you know, and it wasn't until I lost all that I realized, you know what? Yeah, it's bad, but it's actually not that bad because you always find a way. And that's what life is all about for me. Like, I don't look for problems and I don't look for anybody ever gives me a problem and say, right, don't give me that bollocks. Don't give me a problem. Give me the solution. You know, all I want is a solution. And there's a solution to every problem. There's a solution to every problem. There's always a way. And if one door gets closed in your face, there's multiple other doors. You just have to keep moving forward, you know. And whenever it gets too much, keep it in the day. And I was always told, if you can't even keep it in the day, keep it in the hour. And if the hour gets too much, keep a minute by fucking minute because it will all work out.
That's brilliant advice. What do you say to people? Because I know I've spoken to other people who've overcome addiction and running has stepped in there. Do you think it's a healthy obsession? Has it replaced? Is it one addiction that's replaced another? I don't think it is. What do you say to people who ask you that question? Because I know you get asked this.
Yeah, like a lot of people always say to me, oh, but you're just swapping one addiction with another. And to be quite honest with you, at the start, I used to defend it, you know. But now I actually don't give a bollocks because regardless of what people say, I'm an addict. I have the mindset of an addict, and whether I like it or not, I'm going to involve myself into things that I fucking love to do. I loved fucking sniffing coke. I loved taking drugs. Nobody gave out to me back then. But then you go and fucking start running every day and people say, hold on for a second, you're swapping one addiction with another. Like,
serious.
Get a fucking grip, you know what I mean?
Where do you get your drive from?
To be quite honest with you, ever since I got sober, I feel like I have the opportunity of making something in my life. I feel like I have an opportunity of becoming somebody that my daughter will look up to. When I'm dead and when I'm gone, she'll always be able to say, you know what, that was my dad. And that's what pushes me on, you know. I never had money, never had a privileged upbringing or anything like that. I never had none. And I want to be able to acquire everything. So I can show my daughter and show anybody who follows the journey that's possible, you know. Genuinely, I'll be honest with you, I don't give a bollocks about external things. I fell into that trap about a year ago, you know, buying fancy clothes, fancy watches. Then I realised, like, it does fuck off you, you know. I want to struggle, I want to suffer, I want to succeed, and I want to leave all to my daughter.
Why do you say, I want to struggle and I want to suffer?
I just love it, man, you know.
What do you love about struggle and suffer?
I love feeling the old version of me that's still inside me, you know. I love feeling the fact that I want to give up. Like, every day I want to give up. Every day I want to give in. Every day I'd probably be close enough to fucking going back on drugs, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get compulsions and I don't get cravings, but it never truly will leave you, you know. But I just have the opportunity to make something in my life. And I fucking... It just comes through struggling, man. It comes through that adversity.
What's going through your head when you're training and you're running the full length of Ireland and you're tired and you're fatigued? Is there a calmness? Is there a madness? Is there a conversation?
It's a lot of
the above.
It's just what I just tried to say there. I don't know what the fuck it is, but it's just a mixture of everything, you know. One minute you're happy, one minute you're sad, one minute you're friends, next minute you're going to fucking kill them. It's a complete concoction of the unknown, you know. It's different for everybody. For me, it was chaos, you know, and it's just about finding the calm in the storm, and it's just madness, you know.
So if someone was to ask you what role failure played in your journey, would you say it was the foundation of everything?
Yeah, I love to fail, man, you know, and I truly mean that, because, like, when you fail, you learn. You know, and I used to always be afraid of failure. And I know most of the high performing athletes always say that I win because I like to win. But I think that I do well in life because I'm accessible to failing. I actually don't mind if I fail. Because if I fail, I learn. And if I learn, I become a little bit more humble. And if I become a little bit more humble, then I'm a little bit better in myself. And then if I succeed, then happy days, because I'm on to the next fucking thing, you know?
If you were to kind of pinpoint a goal for yourself, reaching people, from what I get from you, is huge. And, you know, being able to impact someone's journey in a positive way is big. I mean, that's a global thing. How big do you want to go with this? How big do you see or envision yourself going with this journey?
To be honest with you, I want to go all over the world, you know? Ever since I started this, that's what I said. Even with the 5K with Chris, like, I want to turn 5K with Chris into a TV show. Inevitably, I want to be able to run all over the world with these people who we've all looked up to, you know? But we've all seen ourselves in them, you know? And I want to be able to show anybody who's at rock bottom that it's possible. It's possible to chase your dreams. It's possible to come out the other end of it. And it's possible to turn your life around, you know? Everybody has something, but you need to find a way. And I just want to help people to be able to help themselves. I'm not a messiah. I'm not a fucking life coach. I'm no different to anybody else. When I'm taking a shit, I sit down the exact same as everybody else. And don't ever forget that, you know? But I just want people to know that you're not any different to anybody else. I'm no different to anybody else. But there's something that needs to be awakened in all of us. And the only way you're going to awaken it is by fucking struggling and by working hard.
Who's the most inspiring person you've had a 5K with? I mean, there can be a couple of them, but like if there was three or four that you were to pick out.
Inspiring.
Or impactful.
I always say this, like, and I only said it to you coming up, like, one of the best relationships I've ever got was meeting Paul Merriman. And the reason why, and most people fucking slag me off this because I always fucking say as well, including you as well, you give me a fucking hard time about it as well. But the reason why I love Paul and I felt like he helped me so much was because he's seeing what I'm seeing. He helped me to believe in myself, you know. And at the start when he was trying to help me, I kept thinking to myself, he's up to something, you know. He's trying to, because that's the way I was brought up. But he's just trying to help me, you know. He's seen the vision. He believed in me. And he was almost like, I'd say that he's a friend to me, but I always felt like he was like a father figure, you know? And I know that sounds a bit mad, you know? But I felt like he was just there to guide me, because very first interaction when I met him and I had done the 5K with Chris with the phone out like this, he was like, oh, you do that with the phone? I thought it was a camera crew. And I was like, no, it's just with the phone. He's like, this is brilliant. You need to do this and you need to fly over to Portugal. I'll fly over to Portugal and you need to do this and do. And he just mapped everything out. And he even said at that day, I'll introduce you to John Belton, and John Belton will introduce you to Vogue, and Vogue will introduce you to Spencer. And all these things happened. Mm-hmm. And they all happened in the accordance. And then I started to realise, like, hold on for a second. Like, first of all, he doesn't want that from me. And second of all, he sees what I see. And it just helped me to believe in myself. And then when I was just saying that he was just a regular bloke, then I was like, hold on for a second, this cunt's a millionaire. So if he's a millionaire, I can be a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And that's what people need, to surround themselves with successful people who you can also correlate and understand that they're no fucking different than you. And if they can do it, you can do it too. So the sky's the limit, you know? And that's why he helped me realise.
And aside from Paul, is there anyone else you could put in? The Paul Merriman Show, sponsored by First.
You're putting me a little bit on the spot, you know, but there's not... Everybody, you know,
has something.
Everybody has something. And that's why one of the reasons why I reached out to you the other day is because, and I'm not just saying this because you're sitting across me, is because there's a way that you speak and the way you act and the way that you behave. And we only had a conversation here a while ago. And when we had that conversation, I said to myself, hold on for a second. He's the fucking exact same as me. That's all I ever crave in my life. It's all I ever want in my life, to know that people who are successful, people who embody something that I want in myself, are the fucking exact same as me. You know what I mean? I want to be surrounded by good people, John, you know? And I want to be the person who shows people that good people are all around you. You just have to stop thinking and start feeling.
What would you say to someone trying to follow in your footsteps aside from that, to stop thinking, start feeling?
You know what? It's probably a little bit controversial what I'd say, but I'll say it regardless. Don't follow any rule book. You know, when I only got out of treatment, people were telling me, do this, do that. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I don't want to do the things that other people are telling me to do. Stop listening to other people and start listening to yourself. Make sure that you do the next best thing. Make sure that you do the right thing for you. Once you're not hurting anybody else and once you're not hurting yourself, happy fucking days. Ask yourself, what would you want to do in life if money was no object? You know, what do you love to do? And try to find a way to make money from it, because we all need money.
Yeah,
you know, we all need a purpose, but we all need something in our life that we fucking love.
What does success mean to you now?
You know what the crazy thing is, that I always thought that success meant money, you know, and I only recently learned that the reason why I thought that was because I never had any money. And it's different to everybody else. And as I start to progress in my life, it's starting to change. You know, now success means that my daughter's looked after by me, you know, and that she's proud of me. It's all I want my daughter to be. I want Lucy to be 18 years of age, and I'm in the middle of finishing a book that I started for her in treatment as well.
Start writing a book.
Yeah. Like, basically I wrote a book for her that I would teach her about, like, my thoughts on love, my thoughts on fear, my thoughts on resentment, my thoughts on every struggle that I've always faced in my life. And I want to put the book away, and I want her to open it when she's 18 years of age. And regardless if the advice is right or wrong, she's going to know that that's how our dad navigated his life.
That's a brilliant idea. And my next question was, have there been any books, people or experiences that have had a major impact on your growth, books or people more so?
Yeah, I can remember my friend Darden Gray gave me a book called Stillness Speaks by Eckhart Tolle, and it was the most impactful thing that I've ever experienced in my life, because I was always somebody who suffered from mass overthinking, and I would always overthink until I realised that I was just doing it by, it was just like the gears were constantly going around. And I never knew that I could stop it. But that book helped me to realise that I could stop it and I could actually live in the present moment.
So you've ran the full length of Ireland. We could have had a podcast in that in itself. I remember speaking to you beforehand, having a chat about it. The most unprepared ultramarathon one I've ever met in my life. But we got you.
Yeah.
You know, we got a bit of headway. You still, of course, managed to do it as I knew you would. Pulling your toenails off one day into it, and yeah, you know, a few cuts and bruises on it, which made great content, which is half the battle, isn't it? But you did something that probably less than 0.1% of the population have ever attempted, never mind completed.
Yeah.
How was that journey for you, if you were to describe it in a nutshell?
Yeah, it just helped me to realise a lot of things about myself, you know. I was delighted to be able to raise the money for Archie, who badly needs some money. But it was also very grateful to be going onto that journey where I just learned so much about myself, learned so much about people around me, learned so much about life, you know, because like I was very negligent to go into that run, and you know this as well, thinking it was going to be easy. And I remember the day before, you sent me down and says, we actually think that you shouldn't do this and you should probably put it off for a little bit. And I was like, no, I'll be all right. But that was just my whole method.
Now, just for the record, I'm wise enough to not tell you not to do
that. No, I know that.
I said, I have a suggestion for you. It's going to fall on deaf ears. Oh. And I think you sort of drifted off as we said that. But I knew you, and Paul knew that you would complete it. Completing something without losing toenails and stuff is just, that's totally terrible.
Yeah,
to have a good experience, which you still managed to have. And this podcast is called Find Your Edge.
Yeah.
Find Your Edge is a line I heard an ultramarathon runner said when asked why he does these multi-stage races. And he said, to find the edges. The edges of our capacity, as our physical capacity and our mental capacity, and the edges of our psychosis that could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. I do think that in doing a 10 or 12 or 5-day endurance event, you experience more living in that short period than most people do in a lifetime, never mind in 5 or 10 years. And what's next?
Next, I want to run the length of the UK. in October, please God. I want to do 30 marathons in 30 days. And I want to do it once again for Art Janus. I want to raise as much funds as for him as possible. And I want to keep pushing the ball, you know. As I said, like, I feel like I've the opportunity here to make something in my life and to also leave a legacy for my daughter to be able to look up to, you know. Whenever she's struggling or whenever she goes through adversity or whatever comes her way, she'll always be able to understand, hold on a second, if my dad done all those things that he could do, well then so can I.
So we have quick fire questions. I don't write the quick fire questions.
Sorry.
I think the element of surprise is important here, and it softens what has been a very enjoyable conversation. What's your guilty pleasure?
Listen to sad music.
Listen, do you have a little cry?
Yeah.
Do you cry much?
Well, I'm on my own, yeah.
That's interesting. Don't have to be on your own. Cry. There's been people crying in that seat. That's okay. Yeah. Where's your favourite place to run in Ireland?
I love to run out by Dunleary, just before Dunleary. What's the name of it? Sandymount. Yeah, love it. Yeah,
it's over there. First thing you do when you wake up?
First thing I do when I wake up is get a cold shower.
Oh, really? Out for a couple of minutes in a cold shower?
Yeah, I never pay for hot water.
What's your best post-run snack? Chippers.
Chippers, yeah. I'm a fucking bad eater, yeah.
That'll change. Songs that instantly put you in good mood.
Depends on the day, you know. I like Juice WRLD, you know. I like Juice WRLD.
Very good. Most dangerous substance you abuse now? Curries.
Yeah, takeaways.
If you could run anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I would love to run the Great Wall of China.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be, all-time proudest achievement?
Getting sober.
Come on. Which step is the most exhausting, 12 steps or 10,000 steps a day?
12 steps.
Definitely. What is your new red flag in other people since getting sober?
People being dishonest.
Very good. Advice for anyone wanting to get into running?
Just fucking do it.
Just start. Longest party you've ever been to?
Most parties went into a couple of days.
What's your least favourite part of running?
Stopping
at the end of it.
Stopping.
Most people, it's the getting started bit, the start a bit. That's interesting. Favorite brand of running shoe?
Running
anything.
Yeah.
As I found out.
Yeah.
Let's see. A funny story from your wild days.
A funny story from my wild days. Oh, there's enough of them. A lot of them are pretty dark. Like, it's not, you have to put me on the spot there. I'd say probably, I don't know, I used to hide under my bed every time I used to get psychosis, you know. Just think people were after me and hide under bed, or I'd be peeping through peepholes, you know, trying to block you.
If you could have dinner with anybody living or dead?
I'd love to have dinner with Jesus Christ.
Fair, one of the 12 apostles. If you could switch lives with any fictional character, and it can't be Jesus Christ, who would it be?
Superman.
Okay, fair enough. What's your party trick?
They're long gone, John boy.
Good man. And your favourite quote?
John 3:16. For God so loved the world, he gave his one and only son. For those who believe in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life.
Well done. Chris Connolly, an absolute pleasure. You're on a serious journey, and I'm glad to be able to have an insight into it. And thank you so much for your time. An absolute legend.
Thank you, bro.